Hi, I'm Latonya Monadic. And they told us we had to read the speaker statement, so I'll take care of that first. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside of the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Again, hi, I'm Latonya Monadic, and I'm very nervous. I've never spoken at a convention before, so be kind. love you, too. I guess I'll start at the end of my road, you know, or a little part of my story is that I use a lot. You know, I binged a lot in the end of my story, and at the end, I felt like because I was a binger, I could control my usage, you know, because I still had a house, because I still had my kids, because I still had a car, that, you know, things weren't that bad, and I could always recoup when I messed up, you know. But at the end of my road, my last run, which my sponsor tells me never to forget, is that I spent my last month in active addiction in somebody's basement using the bathroom in a bucket. You know, I'm not even using that long, but just I couldn't leave because all the guilt and the shame, you know, of facing everybody that I let down again. You know, I just didn't want to do. I just wanted to sit there. You know, I ain't had no more money left about 30 days. You know, but I just sat there until they made me leave. And when I left there, I went straight into a treatment facility. And when I walked into that facility, you know, I thought how I had just messed up everything. You know, my kids didn't love me no more. I had let them down too many times. That I had made so many bad decisions in my active addiction that I just didn't know how I was going to ever get better again. You know, and I walked into, they made me go to these groups in treatment. And one of the groups was a H&I meeting. And it was this lady, you know, it was this lady that came in and she was just fly. You know what I'm saying? And I used to be fly at one time. I wasn't fly right then, right? But I remember being fly, you know? And she was just fly. Her hair was tight, you know? Everything was cool. And she talked about how she had lost everything and how she told my story is what she did. And then she talked about also how she had just purchased a home and how, you know, she had finished college, you know, in recovery. So I'm like, well, maybe, you know, that was my little first spark of hope when I came back into recovery, that maybe I could do it because I can identify with her, you know. And I never saw her. I didn't see her till like 4 years later after I came out of treatment, you know. But she doesn't know the effect that she had on me, you know, in the beginning where I didn't think there was any hope. She gave me hope. So when I came out of treatment, because I was so beaten up, man. I took most suggestions. I'm like, you know, everybody say I didn't take no suggestions. I took most. I was afraid of going back to that bucket. You know, I took most suggestions, and I reaped a lot of rewards. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know I was practicing faith at the time, but I was. I didn't know why I had to do all these things, you know, like calling people every day and reading the same thing every night over and over again. I didn't know why I had to do all that stuff, but I was so desperate to have something different that I did something different in the beginning. And it turned out well for me, you know. I've had a lot of ups and downs in recovery, but I remember being so grateful for this program. When I had enough clean time, I went to an H&I meeting, committee meeting, and I asked for service. So they put me in service. And because I was such a chicken, I didn't want to go around grown folks. I wanted to go around kids. You know, there were no people, you know. I was just afraid. I've always been afraid. That was one of my character defects. And the way I learned how to tell my story was through H&I. I went to the children's facilities, and I shared my story, and I bought speakers, and I became more comfortable with telling my story. And I became more grateful. You know, it wasn't about me anymore. You know, when I left there, even when I didn't want to go to H&I meeting, because I had something else to do. Somebody had an anniversary coming up. Something was going on that I wanted to be at, you know. I had to go anyway, you know. And I went, and I've never, ever gone to those meetings, those H&I meetings, and not been grateful after I left, even when I wasn't grateful for going, you know. Those kids, in the beginning, those kids really helped me to see me. You know, they helped me with my step work. They helped me to understand that, you know, that it really wasn't about drugs. It was really about the behaviors. You know, they showed me the behaviors that I had before I picked up, you know. So they really helped me in my recovery in more ways than one, you know. And I'm very grateful that I got in service so early and I stayed in H&I service. And recently I just started taking meetings into the jail. Jail is not a part of my story, you know, and the people were trying to get me to go before, but because of my fear, you know, I'm like, I've never been to jail. I don't have anything to give these women, you know. So finally, I went, and I am so grateful. You know, I am so grateful. These women, It's just amazing how much we're more alike than different, you know. And I know it's only through grace that I didn't end up in one of those jumpsuits like those women, you know. But they look forward to those meetings. And at the point right now, the facility that I go in right now, one woman for the last 15 years has been taking this meeting in by herself. She had been taking this meeting in for the last 15 years. She doesn't want to let it go. Right now she's sick, so she had less than weeks go. And that's how I got the opening to go in there. But getting people, the reason why she was able to do that was because people weren't stepping up. They weren't getting in service. You know, I know a lot of people don't come in here just because they got sick and tired and just walked into an NA meeting. They came in here through some facility. They came in here through some jail or some kind of means that, you know, they had a H&I message delivered to them. And then they come and they get clean and we forget. We forget, you know. It's really sad how many people are carrying in our county. I'm from Montgomery County. It's really sad to see how many people are carrying multiple meetings when we're such a big county. You know what I mean? Everyone in our county who's in service are in service in multiple areas, and they do all the service in the county. But then the people who don't do any service are the ones that complain about all the changes and all the things that they were voting on that they don't, you know, they weren't a part of, and then they don't like the new changes, but they were never there for any of the committee meetings. They were never there for any of the discussions or anything like that, and they didn't have a say in it because they didn't want one. They just want to complain about it, you know. Service has blessed me tremendously, you know. I can say that, you know, my life doesn't resemble what it did when I was in that treatment facility. And I am just ever, 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 ever so grateful. Today, I'm a homeowner. You know what I mean? When I was sitting in that facility, before I came in there, I was just, my goal was to be able to pay my rent when it was due. You know, that was just, that's how far I could think. I couldn't think any further than that. That was a great accomplishment for me. You know, filling my tank up to the F was a big accomplishment for me, you know what I mean? And when I came in recovery, you know, and paying the bill and not on it. You know what I mean? It was a big accomplishment for me when I came in here. And I've just come leaps and bounds. You know, I'm a responsible member of society, you know, as a result of following suggestions that and giving back to the folks in this fellowship was been given to me. I don't know how to explain any further without you just coming to an H&I meeting and seeing the gratitude that you get, you know. It's one thing. Another thing that H&I did for me was that, you know, you get caught up in the fellowship. I got caught up in the fellowship where you get popular. People see you. You want to be seen everywhere. And you kind of lose focus of why you're here. You know, H&I kind of like kept it in perspective for me. You know, it showed me what was really important, that society thing is not why I'm here. You know, where nobody in the society of this fellowship with me with that bucket. You understand? But when I help somebody else, help keep them from seeing that bucket, you know, and it keeps it in perspective for me, you know. I'm going to just close with this. I don't know if my time is up, but I don't know. A really good friend of mine explained, because in the beginning, because you want to help everybody, you know, you real, you know, overzealous, if somebody, you know, don't make it, you know, you take it real personal. She explained to me that H&I was like walking into a barren field with a handful of seeds. You walk in the middle of the field, you throw out the seeds, and you walk away, and it's not your responsibility what grows and what doesn't, you know, And that helped me, you know, to keep going, you know, in this process, because I can't say that, even though it's been very gratifying going to these meetings and extending myself and relating to these people who need help like I did in the beginning, that I don't see a lot of them in the rooms. You know, I see some, but I don't see the majority of those people after they get out of jail, after they get out of treatment, in my area, in the rooms, you know. And I can, you know, in the beginning, you don't understand. When when you're a little newer, you get a little discouraged. But know, you know, that you planted a seed. And I know people planted a seed with me long before I got clean, you know. Long, long before I got clean, I knew about this program. I knew about the gift of recovery. I just wasn't willing, but the seed grew eventually when it was time, and that helped me a lot to keep going in this process, because people get discouraged, you know. People get discouraged, but don't be. Just step up. Get your friends. Bring your sponsees. You know, bring your sponsor. You know, sometimes sponsors get time and they be like tired. They had to sit down for a minute or whatever. Bring your sponsors to, you know, to speak and things like that. You know, to help give a message of recovery. You know, the lady in this jail, although it's good that she's that dedicated to going there for 15 years, you know, the meeting has taken on her it's her meeting. It's her personality. Those women are of multiple nationalities. They're Hispanic. They're black. They're white. You know, there's some Asian women in there, and they're getting one message. They don't see anybody. The black women don't see anybody look like them. The Spanish folks don't see anybody that looks like them. So it's only some people who share in the meeting, some people who identify with this one woman, and some who just sit there for 90 minutes. But if you bring speakers in of multiple backgrounds, then you give everyone an opportunity to identify in, you know. I was going to have a little more time to share, because I'm done, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, LaTanya. At this time, I'd like to introduce Alvin. Why don't y'all welcome him with a round of applause?
All the time. I'm Alvin, I'm an addict. So by God's grace, did I stand here clean? And I got to read this too, right? Speaker statement. That's what they say. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 tradition, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell on excessively on your active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We come to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. I'm Alvin. I'm an addict. It's only by God's grace that I stand here clean, and I'd like to thank the CMP region for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. My clean date is May 9th, 1986. And my home group is a Recovery Alley group of Narcotics Anonymous. It's in the Rock Creek area. We meet every Friday night at 10 o'clock. It's a candlelight meeting, so come on by. We're in the basement with the lights off, so don't be scared. Just come on downstairs and come on into the meeting. And, you know, I'm grateful to be here today. A friend of mine always talks about it's a good day to be clean, and it is. You know, I'm excited about my recovery. I'm excited about my life. I'm excited about being here at Ocean City. I've been here more times than I could count. And it's a wonderful experience. You know, I get to see people I haven't seen in a while, you know, that come. You know, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous in the Washington, D.C. area, the fellowship could fit in this room. You know, almost 20 years later, man, you know, we can have a convention of thousands of people. And I don't get to see them as much, you know, because I'm in service and some of them are in service and some of them have families and things that they do, man. And, you know, so I'm real happy to be here, you know, and to be a part of something so great. It wasn't like that when I got here, and I'll be brief with my experience, strength, and hope. When I got here, I was 33 years old. I was sleeping on my mother's couch. I was a bum, you know, and my gratitude, you know, was to steal out of her purse any chance I got, you know. So she had a grown man on her couch, but she had to sleep with her purse, you know. That's my story, you know. My story is, you know, of an addict man who, when at the end of the road, man, would go to get one on Friday night, and on Saturday night, all he'd have was the bus transfer from the night before. You know, and I did this time and time again, you know, not recognizing that I had a disease, you know, thinking that, you know, I just needed to use less. Just this one time, you know, maybe if I put my money in different envelopes and marked it rent money and food money and travel money, I wouldn't open it, you know. But at the end of the night, you know, all the envelopes would be open, and they would be at the feet, and I would be searching in my sock, knowing I didn't put money in there, and I would be looking down the street, thinking I dropped something blocks away, as I was going home, time and time and time again, you know. I didn't know how I'd gotten like that. You know, that's not how it started. But that's how it ended. You know, and I have to remember to play the tape all the way out, you know, from the cognac to the Black Bull, you know. That's what my mother used to have in the house, man. I'd come there and drink that. You know, anything, man, not to feel, you know. And when I got here, you people kind of let me know, man, it was about the drugs, Alvin. But not about the drugs, you know. That was one of the first paradoxes for me, you know. That drugs are just a symptom of your problem. You know, that there's some kind of stuff going on with you, man, that you're going to have to get in touch with. And that's where the steps came in, you know. When I came in, man, I was at a facility. It was a treatment facility. And this is not an endorsement of treatment facilities. It's just my story. Because our program is such a program, man, where an addict can come in, you know, lose the desire to use and find a new way to live right here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I've seen addicts come in, stay and get clean, You know, and as a matter of fact, you know, when I was in that facility, man, I was hearing a lot of mixed messages. You know, they would say stuff to me like, you know, only 1 in 10 of you, you know, going to make it when you get out of here. You know, they would take me to meetings, you know, that weren't Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and I would hear people talking about, you know, there are people who are constitutionally incapable of getting this message. But that's not what we say in Narcotics Anonymous. What we say here is that anyone may join us. You know what I mean? Regardless of, you know, what we say here is, you know, you're never alone. You know, what we say in Narcotics Anonymous is when nobody else wants you, you're just right for N.A. You know, so when I got here, man, that was the message I was hearing. But when I was in that facility, man, you know, somebody came, and it was an H&I meeting. You know, it was a member there, man, and at the time, I thought that member had 80 years, you know, because the information that they were sharing was so profound, you know. And what they were doing at that time, and I didn't know it, that was N.A. service. You know, this is what this workshop is about. This is a service workshop. H&I and PR are part of our ninth tradition. You know, there are committees that are created, man, to serve the addicts, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't know that at the time. I just thought that, you know, this is a nice lady. Maybe she was at Johns Hopkins with a PhD or something, you know. But when I heard her story, man, I started to identify with what she was sharing. And one of the things she shared, man, she said, I didn't have to use, you know, even if I wanted to. You know, if you don't pick it up, you won't get high. And, man, that was some profound shit, man. I had never heard anybody share that. I never knew anybody. As I grew older and I became emancipated, you know, and got away from my mother and all my first sponsors, you know, mothers, pastors, counselors, school teachers, people like that. Once I got away from those people, man, everybody that I hung out with, man, got high. You know, pure and simple. All the Waynards and Manigos and Joey's in my neighborhood, man, all those folks got high, man. So when she shared that information, man, it, you know, kind of blew me away, man. And one of the things that I immediately got in touch with, man, as I kept coming back to this program, man, was the hope, you know, the hope that I could do what these people were talking about. And what I got in touch with, man, was that these people had found a way out, and they were willing to share that way out with me, you know, if I was willing. What they were saying when they came up there, man, you can join us. You know, and I have to be clear about that because, you know, there are times, man, when I hear a message in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting where new people come in and think we need to join them. You know, but it's about but it's about joining us in Narcotics Anonymous, man, you know. So when I got out and I started going to meetings, man, you know, I continued to go to meetings, man, and for the first 5 or 6 years of my recovery, man, even though they didn't have half the meetings in my area, man, I went to a meeting every day. I could count on one hand the amount of meetings that I missed, man. They told me early on that meeting makers make it, you know. They shared with me, you know, about, you know, getting a sponsor, going to meetings, not picking up, man, and not using no matter what. You know, and there have been some no matter what situations in recovery for me, you know. I remember service in Narcotics Anonymous when I first got clean, man. It didn't have a lot of service positions. You know, you could go to a meeting, man, and it would be a secretary's position and 7 people trying to be a secretary. Because everybody's sponsor told them, you know, to get in service, you know. And now I can go to area service, man. We got 60 groups, man. If we get 40 groups, man, to come to area service, man, we are clapping. We're overjoyed that we could get 40 groups, man. We're getting like, you know, 40, 50, 60%, you know, participation in groups, man. But when I got clean, man, it was just like that. I wonder why. And as a result of not having a lot of meetings, man, you had a lot of dope fiend going on, right? You know, you go to a meeting and you know you wanted to be the secretary. So what you do is you bring a lot of friends from another group to come on over. You know, that was our way of saying, that was our idea of a group conscious, right? And what you would do is you invite, you would you know, you would get all those people in, and they would vote you into position, man. That's how bad we wanted to be in service, you know. You know, recognizing, you know, because our sponsors were telling us that. And that's the kind of information they were giving us. You know, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, man, I didn't know how the program worked. I didn't know that there were, that addicts were responsible for the things that went on, that we were fully self-supporting through our own contributions, you know. Not just passing in the basket, man, but that addicts were responsible for the meeting doors being open, that addicts were responsible for the coffee being made. I was at a group anniversary, and one of my predecessors, you know, came up and shared. He said, look, we are not guests in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, if the coffee pot is run out of coffee, man, then, you know, and you don't see the coffee maker, get up and put some more coffee on. You know, we are fully self-supporting. You know, one of the things that, you know, I came to understand, man, is that, you know, the literature that is brought to our meetings is brought by addicts. You know, not printed by addicts, but they're the ones that order the literature. The addicts are the ones that order the basic text. Addicts are the ones that order the meeting list. You know, it's addicts that do that. The addicts are the one that put on this convention. My first convention, man, I thought it was planned by professional planners. Until I started getting involved and participating in service and finding out more about what Narcotics Anonymous service is all about, you know. I remember being a part of a home group, you know, and the group is the most powerful vehicle of carrying the message, man. It's, you know, like I said, my home group is Recovery Alley, and that's been my home group for the last 6 years, you know. And part of serving this fellowship, man, is participating in that home group, man, having an atmosphere of recovery for the new person as he comes to the meeting, you know. I also remember, man, you know, early on in my recovery, man, how important it was, you know, to make those 12-step calls. You know, many a times, man, I've had to go and pick up an addict, man, and give an addict a ride. You know, I remember I had a car. It was an old Torino. It didn't have any floorboards in the back, right? So you had to put your feet up like the Flintstones, right? And I remember, you know, I'd pick up an addict, man. I put him in my car, man, and they put their feet. I'd say, everybody got their feet up? You know, we put down the road, and that's 20 years ago, man. Almost 20 years ago, man. All the addicts that were in that car, man, that was like our first or second year, still clean today, man. Because we kept participating, you know, in our own recovery, you know. Currently, man, what I'm the D.C. chair for the Public Information Subcommittee, and one of the things that this workshop is about is public information. And you know, I look out, I see the people who work on the committee with me. I have a fine committee of people, man, that work with me. And, you know, first thing, I'm going to give them a shout-out and thank them for the work that they do, you know, because one of the things that I recognize about public information, man, is that, you know, some members have to sacrifice their anonymity, you know, to be a part of public information. You know, one of the big things that we do the last couple of years has been the News 4 Health Expo down at the convention center, man. And, you know, they've kind of set up the booths, and they set up information about Narcotics Anonymous for people who come by. And I tell you, man, it's a real challenge because, you know, folks that will come by and, you know, they get all kinds of free stuff, right? You know, you get something about, you know, they give you a pen for cholesterol, and you get something about cholesterol, and they give you a little key tag for diabetes, and you get a little key. And then they come by the NA booth, they look at it, and they reach, and then they see what it is, and then they slowly back away. And they kind of look at you, man, and they say, you know, and, you know, we offer the literature, and they say, well, no, thank you, you know. So you'll be at a booth with thousands of people, man, and you could sit for hours at a time, man, and nobody will come by, you know, and your patients will have to be there, man. You know, last year at the convention, I remember getting a call from one of the people who was working at a table, man, and their voice was filled with so much emotion. And what they were sharing, man, was that, you know, they were at that health fair, man, that was a little girl that come up and had leaned over and asked him. He said, asked him what was, you know, this workshop about. And we were talking, told him it was about public information. And she leaned over and she said, "But can you guys help my grandmother?" And she was like 8 or 9 years old. And he was one of the ones that were like, "Oh, I got to go to the workshop, man." And he called me. He said, "Man," he had been down there all day. He said, "Man, it's been worth it." He said, "That's why I'm here. I know why I'm here, you know." And that's what we do. One of the challenges, though, for a lot of members, man, is that, you know, because, the whole concept of anonymity, you know, at the level of press rate on film for members, they try to carry that anonymity over to the public information workshop, and that's not the case. We have an IP. It's a purple one, IP number 15. It says PI in a member, and it talks about the purpose of PI. You know, what is public information? The role of the PI committee is to ensure that clear and accurate information about NA is available to the public. The demand for information about our fellowship is greater than ever. And what I've come to understand by being in PI, man, is that we're not a secret society. You know what I'm saying? When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, man, you know, I didn't know about Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I knew about AA, AAA, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't know anything about NA, you know, until I came here. And that's what, you know, the role of the Public Information Subcommittee is, you know. And you have a role in the image of Narcotics Anonymous. I think the latest, we have a public relations handbook that's coming out. And one of the things that is first and foremost in the front of our fellowship now is the image of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, what is the image that the NA member is carrying? You know, we have some meetings in Washington, man, where Public Information Subcommittee of the D.C. area has been asked to come out, man, and lend them some support, man, to help the meetings, you know, and their structure. You know, people are standing outside of meetings at a hospital, man, with their trunks open and the music blaring. You know, people are vending outside of the meeting. You know what I mean? You come into the meeting area, it's like a hallway from here to that door, and you know, they're standing out in the hallway subgrouping as opposed to kind of coming in the meeting or moving on. You know, they've taken recovery for granted. You know, they're taking recovery for granted, and one of the things that, you know, the PI subcommittee is trying to help groups understand, because all groups are autonomous, you know, and when we come into outreach to groups, you know, in our area, you know, we have a general format that, you know, so that we don't come in, you know, trying to boss people around. Because trust me, you know, the first one thing I know about an addict, you try to tell an addict what to do and how to do it. You know what I'm saying? Bossing them around, you know, that'll get the hair up on their neck. But what we share, man, is you know, what our traditions say. You know, what we share is, man, you know, that if this meeting closes as a result of, you know, of the behavior that goes on in and outside of these rooms, man, addicts die. You know, without that information, you know. I had kind of taken some notes down about, you know, about service, and, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was in a meeting was, and I wrote it down, it had too much time to serve or all served out, you know. You know, I have time in this program. But I don't have too much time to serve, you know. I remember there was a time when I felt money, property, and prestige, you know, was the most important thing for me. I had two jobs. I was working 70 or 80 hours a week. You know, my spiritual condition consisted of, "Lord, just make sure the alarm goes off so I can get to my second job," you know. And what happened as a result of that, man, I kind of, you know, drifted away from the fellowship, you know. What I've, you know, come to understand, man, by keep coming back, man, is that, you know, I can only keep what I have by giving it away. You know, that's a spiritual principle, man, that's involved in our steps. And what I've done, man, is I've kind of kept coming back, you know. There are times, man, when I would really like to sit at home and watch 24, or watch one of those programs on television, man. And what I've had to do, man, is kind of, you know, put the taper on, and go out and continue to serve the fellowship, you know. Public information, man, you know, is in need of your support. You know, I have a committee, the committee that I serve on, the committee that I serve on, you know, is a committee where we have, you know, quite a few people, but there are some subcommittees, man, PI subcommittees, man, that are in dire need of support, you know. You know, we have churches and facilities that want meetings, and part of the role of H&I and PI, and that's why Latoya and I are here, is that when a facility wants a meeting, public information goes out and lets the public know about Narcotics Anonymous. So when I go out sometimes to a facility, I go out and I'll tell them, you know, our history and, you know, the history of the Narcotics Anonymous in this area. And I share about our fellowship, you know, share about, you know, the fact that, you know, we use the, you know, we look at addiction as a disease. You know, I share that, you know, we're a program that promotes complete abstinence from all drugs. You know, and let the folks understand that, you know, that the groups would be autonomous. You know, I have to go to a church when I get back next Thursday, and when I go up there, you know, I'm gonna have to have a meeting with the board of trustees and the pastor and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm gonna have to tell, you know, the pastor, you know, I'm gonna have to, in a loving and caring way, let the pastor know. I can tell fast enough. In a loving and caring way, man, that, you know, that the group has to have a level of autonomy, okay? That, you know, y'all can't come down, you know, and pass your basket. You can't come down and, you know, try to distribute your literature. You can't come down and say, you know, I heard y'all talking about God, but did you read James, you know, 1-6, you know? That's not what we do. You know, there was a workshop here that talks about... just before this one talks about spiritual but not religious, you know, and I've been to meetings, man, where, you know, the pastor would come in at the end of the meeting and wrap it up early in my recovery. He would come in and wrap it up, and the group members had to tell him, you know, pastor, you know, this is not what Narcotics Anonymous is about, you know. You know, when I go to different facilities as an PI member, you know, I have to share with them what the fellowship is about. And H&I, you know, is the person that actually works hand in hand with that facility, you know, to promote, well, not to facilitate the meeting. And even in that, man, I was at a facility, man, and, you know, the whole issue of methadone maintenance was approached, you know. And we have a clear position on that, you know what I'm saying? And the facility asked us not to speak in terms of our position. And we had to respect the facility's, you know, request that we not speak to that issue. You know, so it's there are a lot of things involved, you know, when Narcotics Anonymous meetings go into a facility, the request of a facility, and what our traditions say, you know, our literature says our traditions are non-negotiable, you know what I mean? So when we go into a facility for a meeting, or when I come and do a speaking engagement somewhere, you know, there are certain guidelines that I have. I don't use my last name, you know. One of the things that in the Guide to PI Service, it talks about, not getting trapped, you know, and giving interviews and going on television and going on radio stations, you know, talking about I'm an NA member, you know. Our literature suggests that you not do that. You know, no one member represents Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and if you're the person that represents Narcotics Anonymous, and in the next week, you know, they got you somewhere, man, on the front page, you know, with a cell phone and a bank, you know, then people have an image of Narcotics Anonymous, and more importantly, what I've come to learn, man, in terms of my personal recovery, that that when I stick myself out there, man, and try to promote myself, man, I'm really setting myself up, you know, for some problems down the road. You know, one of the things that, as a member of the Public Information Subcommittee, man, is that, you know, you really do need a dose of humility. You know, a big heaping dose of humility, man, to know that when you go out there, man, it's not you that you're promoting. You know, it's not you that, you know, you don't dress all up, you know, get all gussied up to go out somewhere so people can look at you, man. It's about the program. It's about the addict that I'm going to be able to help when I get out here, man, at these events. You know, another area of that public information is getting into, man, is the NA infrastructure. That was a part of a couple of workshops for our public relations handbook that's coming out. And in one part in particular, man, it talked about pedophiles and, you know, not pedophiles, but predators. I didn't use that word, pedophiles. It said predators in meetings. You know, and if any of you had read that part, I guess there are pedophiles, about predators and whether or not that people are willing to send new and young people to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. I mean, we laugh, but that is a real concern, you know, that has been voiced in our fellowship at the world level, man, to the point that, you know, it was a part of some of the literature that came out, you know, in regards to the public relations handbook, you know. And we all have our part to play, man, and, you know, making sure that when the new person comes in to the fellowship, man, he is greeted warmly and he's greeted with love and he's greeted with, you know, the same that you were greeted with when you came into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And, you know, so that, you know, there's a lot to, you know, involved with our ninth tradition, you know. And that's the tradition that creates the service boards and committees in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, this tradition allows the groups to do what, you know, they do. That is carry the message while we do the work, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, our ninth tradition says that, let me put these glasses on. NA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Yet for all the emphasis on keeping things simple, Tradition 9 is not an excuse for disorganized service work. And instead, it recognized that our fellowship does require a certain degree of organization to fulfill its primary purpose, rather than recommend that NA groups themselves become organized. The ninth tradition suggests that groups organize separate boards and committees to serve their needs. Just as we are non-professional but may hire professionals to help us, so we are not organized but may organize committees or boards to serve us. This arrangement ensures that NA, as such, maintains its uncluttered, direct approach to recovery, while ensuring our ability to fulfill tasks requiring a certain amount of organization. You know, Narcotics Anonymous needs you. I remember when I was growing up, they used to say, Uncle Sam needs you, so I was always, I just can't wait to do that. You know, the new slogan is, you know, we are army of one, but, you know, we're not a fellowship of one. We're a fellowship of many. And Narcotics Anonymous needs all the, you know, all the support, you know, to do the work that needs to be done. You know, if you're not in service in Narcotics Anonymous and you say you're a grateful recovering addict, you might want to ask yourself why. I'm an addict named Alvin. Thanks for letting me share.